That's J.B. Branch of Public Citizen speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg. You're listening to KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Daddy, las mamas están aquí para darles información, música y diversión con el show de Mujeres Bravas, los domingos desde las 12 hasta la 1:30 de la tarde.
El que se quede en su silla sentado, que sea castigado por no saber gozar.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Jamie Partridge. Tonight, our guests are Nydia Caballero, a union electrician, and Giovanni Tolentino of the Hillsboro Education Association, a teacher. Nydia, you have been active with the Portland Deportation Defense Coalition, the Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants, and Gio, you are the co-chair of Salem DSA and are involved with the Avello divestment campaign. Welcome, Nydia and Gio.
Thank you for having me.
So we brought you two on the program to talk about President Trump's massive deportation campaign against immigrant workers, communities, families, their employers, and our unions, as well as what we can do to defend our immigrant siblings from deportation. Trump calls immigrants invaders, rapists, criminals, taking our jobs. Why do you think Trump centered anti-immigrant rhetoric in his campaign for president, and how does this fit with his America First crusade?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go first. I believe that he saw it as a way to power. Yeah, Trump used the nativist playbook. He appealed to people's frustrations and really made immigrants the scapegoat. He was successful with that in his first term. So he just kept building that false narrative. This was never about illegal immigration. Because if it was, the focus would be on the employers who are exploiting a vulnerable workforce, or it would be on a revamping of the different convoluted pathways to U.S. citizenship.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jamie. I think that part of the reasoning here is that Trump himself is a capitalist, and he also represents the interests of capital. And since global capital benefits from a workforce that's divided, there is this dependency on exploiting the divisions that are born out of the social and cultural atomization that we're all experiencing. I think the more that they're able to keep us divided, and by they I mean Trump, Musk, the whole capitalist class, the less power that we have to challenge ruling class hegemony over the workplace, economy, and the state. And I think immigrant workers in particular can make a pretty vulnerable target. I think specifically domestic capital also benefits from a permanent underclass of workers. Undocumented immigrants have fewer rights, can easily be purged from the domestic labor force because of deportation. I think because of that, this relationship gives capital a big advantage in the class war.
So why do you think Trump and his henchmen, Tom Holman and Stephen Miller, are ramping up ICE, that is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, raids and kidnappings, promising to pick up 3,000 migrants per day? How much of these, the sometimes spectacular attacks, have been for show? Or what is it? Both to excite Trump's base, terrorize immigrant communities, and provoke Trump's enemies. What do you think?
Something that comes to mind, and I think some other folks have mentioned this before, is the strategy to demoralize and overwhelm. We're seeing a lot of resistance that's being activated in the form of protests, but a lot of these can lack a political message that raises working class expectations. And meanwhile, a lot of segments of the working class still remain disengaged. I think of here in Salem, where we have a lot of demonstrations, but a lot of our Northeast corridor, which is where a lot of our immigrant workers are, those folks are still not being engaged. Those folks are still not politically activated. And so when we have that demoralization, a lot of that overwhelming, I think it enables the Trump regime to execute his agenda without a lot of coordinated resistance.
Yeah, I'll just follow that up with really the reason why they've been ramping up their daily quota is because it was part of Trump's campaign. He promised to carry out the largest mass detention and deportation program in our country's history. But it's that goal just isn't feasible when you're only targeting convicted criminals. And so the fastest and easiest way for ICE to achieve their quotas is really to target the general public. You know, that's why they're kidnapping people outside immigration court hearings, racially profiling people, and, you know, raiding workplaces, because it's not about crime anymore. It's about carrying that largest mass deportation and violating everyone's civil rights to make it happen. But yes, those tactics are serving those purposes simultaneously. They're just able to create more propaganda for the Republican base, and really just able to also work to provoke affected people, those of us that are being affected by these kidnappings, by these raids. That way they can just continue to escalate disproportionately in response to any resistance that we put up. We actually saw similar tactics play out back in 2020 with the Black Lives Matter protests. So, yes.
So what has been the impact of these raids on immigrant families and their workplaces, schools, communities? Can you say a little bit more about what the impact has been?
Yeah, I can go first on that. Well, first and foremost, our neighbors are experiencing family separations. Workplaces are losing essential workers. Schools are experiencing more absenteeism. And I mean, on a bigger scale, I imagine we'll be, you know, further impacted economically when particular industries are continuing to lose their workforce. We already saw a little bit of that now that Trump has been pressured to scale back with the field workers.
And then he reversed himself after 3 days. So what does that mean? Why does he first gives an exception for agriculture, whatever, construction, meatpacking, and then he reverses himself after 3 days? What's that about?
I imagine that's to do with our attention span, how much pressure we're able to sustain on these efforts. And so once we see that initial pushback and he relaxes, rolls back a policy, and then, you know, now that we're not paying attention, continue right back up.
Yeah. In a more local context, as in Salem, where raids are not actively taking place, the impact of this is still deeply felt. There's a lot of immigrant families and social networks that are on high alert. And unfortunately, this does prompt a lot of misinformation. I talk to a lot of family friends, family members, and they talk on social media about how there are a lot of false ICE sightings that take place, even amongst immigrant communities that get spread. And that gets really problematic because in many ways it might even be part of a strategy where you try to leave a lot of immigrant communities almost unsure of what's real, and in a way try to leave them confused and unprepared for real acts of raidings and kidnappings.
Well, mass deportations have been part of recent administrations. Obama being called the deporter in chief, as I recall. Trump's moves have provoked widespread uprisings, including nationwide protests against his family separation policies in 2018, and now the massive raids, especially the impact in Los Angeles, where huge crowds spontaneously interfered with ICE actions, fought police, were met with National Guard and Marines. So what's the significance of the L.A. upheaval, and what are we learning from their resistance?
Something that was pretty remarkable, based on what I was able to observe, is that this was really a mass demonstration, a set of mass demonstrations where labor unions, community organizations, immigrant communities convened to resist against the police and the military. And in that vein, there does seem to be a lot of working class solidarity and appetite to protect immigrant workers. I think what this tells us is that there needs to be a lot of preparedness, a lot of readiness on the part of organized labor across the country to mobilize against raids, against kidnappings, against deportations, no matter where they occur. I think organized labor is a key part of this because it provides the potential for democratic mass participation with accountability structures and leadership identifications. Because one of the few nuances of all this is that there were pockets in the demonstrations where sometimes there were actions or behavior that even immigrant workers themselves, in conversations that I had with friends and family that I have done there, that they even harbor some negative sentiments about. And so when rank and file workers lead with militant action and demands that include very like unitedly the abolition of ICE and end to forever wars and end to the genocide in Gaza and solidarity with all workers of the world, I think that's what will really help challenge and fight back against Trump, capital, and all forces of reaction.
There's some historical significance as well. So that was around June 11th, that weekend that it happened. And June 11th in 1963 was when John F. Kennedy called in the National Guard to Alabama to get Black students into their college. And at that time, state troops were called in by the federal in order to protect constitutional rights. And we are now seeing the exact opposite of that, where they're being called upon to, in violation of people's rights and as an erosion of the Constitution, and seeing that LA had prepared through setting up rapid response networks and really having these dialogues, these communications happening before June in preparation of this administration's escalating tactics, they just, it became, they really showed us that we've actually, it becomes our civic duty, you know, when our legislative and our judicial branches continue to allow the executive abuse of power, there's reason that we have to take up our civic duty at this point.
So labor unions have recently stepped up their organizing against Immigration and Customs Enforcement, provoked by high-profile ICE kidnappings of labor leaders like David Huerta, the president of the California SEIU, Service Employees International Union. Over 30 protests across the country were staged by SEIU a few days after Huerta's detention, involving the AFL-CIO and many other unions. What is the significance? You touched on it a little bit, Gio, but what is the significance and impact of these recent labor mobilizations against ICE?
Yeah, so, SEIU really showed up. They and AFL-CIO already had the infrastructure in place for this sort of fast mobilization. Previously in March of this year, they mobilized statewide, you know, in Washington to advocate for the release of two union members from the Tacoma Detention Center. And Llewellyn Dixon, she was eventually released, but Lelo Juarez still needs our support. So now that we're seeing what happens when these unions, when any unions, when we actually mobilize on a national level, that we are seeing immediate results of really shining the spotlight on fellow union members. So we need to be talking about how our unions can be showing solidarity with each other in more direct ways to really start exercising that muscle of mass mobilization, because that's the core of the union, the power in numbers.
Yeah, and Huerta was released within a few days, as I recall, after those mobilizations.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO, Portland, Oregon. You've been listening to Nydia Caballero, union electrician, and Gio Tolentino, union teacher, talking about labor versus ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. If this is useful information, if you like Labor Radio, please consider supporting our community-sponsored, listener-supported, non-corporate radio station. Go to kboo.fm and make a donation.
So historically, the threat of deportation has effectively kept migrant workers in a weak position, unable to demand decent wages, benefits, working conditions, dragging down the conditions of all workers. While undocumented workers have the right to join unions, the threat of deportation and or actual workplace raids have effectively disrupted union drives. The SEIU has developed contract language that unions can negotiate to protect their immigrant members. Can you share some of that, or and tell our listeners where they can find it?
Yes. So personally, I am not an SEIU member. I am a union electrician, but I've been to different union events where people from many different unions are meeting up. The most recent example was actually the Portland Troublemakers School that was in early May. And so I can't speak for all the locals, but I can say that SEIU 49, they have their contract bargaining agreements listed right on their website. They are accessible. They do currently have language requiring employers to notify the union when DHS or ICE are present at the workplace. If they have another section prohibiting employers from penalizing employees for immigration-related absences. They also ask that they reinstate employees who return with updated work authorizations. And those are just some examples of actually contract language protecting immigrant members. I will also just go ahead and plug Labor Notes, the website. They also have right on there some template contract language from SEIU that you're able to search on their website.
Great. So SEIU Local 49 website and Labor Notes website. And how, if folks want to get hold of, in touch with the Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants, is that what it's called? Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants?
Monthly meetings, Sundays at noon, right at the Painters Hall. We will be having a change of at venue, though. So upcoming meeting July 6th, Sunday at noon, we're still finalizing which location that will be at, but I will update you on that. Absolutely.
So also some unions have helped organize Know Your Rights trainings for their members and families. I know that some of the building trades have done that. I don't know if you specifically were involved, but not only for workplace, but on the street, at home, churches, hospitals, schools. Can you tell us what you know? What a Know Your Rights training is, what are the main lessons, how a union can get help to organize one?
Yeah, so actually that's a great way to plug in Portland's Deportation Defense Coalition. It's a coalition made up of different organizations, and one of those is the IMIRJ. They put on trainings for an accompaniment program, but so that's related to the Know Your Rights trainings. They do also several other organizations do put on their own Know Your Rights trainings, and they go ahead and do those announcements through the Deportation Defense Coalition. Then they just go ahead and disseminate that out to different social media platforms. But yes, the Know Your Rights training really just consists of reminding people that they have the right to remain silent. They have the right to not open the door to anyone on private property. It's really just these reminders about what our rights are when we're interacting with DHS, with ICE.
And there's something in particular to know about warrants, right?
Yes, exactly. So typically the more common one is the administrative warrant that ICE will usually carry around, but really the difference is that an administrative warrant doesn't hold any authority. It's a judicial warrant where then you are legally obligated to comply. And so the Know Your Rights trainings go into how to identify, tell that difference between a judicial warrant and an administrative warrant, and how you can react to what your rights are with each specific one.
Great. And how do folks get a hold of the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition or the Deportation Defense Coalition?
Yes. So they have social media accounts, I would say, with Facebook, Instagram. They also have email. They have a website as well, so they are accessible online.
What's been important to us, particularly as letter carriers, is that we're out on the street, you know, most of the day. So we're eyes and ears all over the city, and we're encouraging our members to report any ICE activity that they see to the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition hotline. The number is 888-622-1510. And they send out, immediately send out verifiers, people to check and see if this is really ICE or Department of Homeland Security or Border Patrol. Because these folks are showing up, the ICE folks are showing up without a uniform, without on unmarked vehicles, wearing masks. So it's kind of hard to tell who they are. But the verifiers then, you know, alert legal observers and legal assistants and mobilize people that are willing to come out and protest. And sometimes folks don't even get arrested when that happens. So that's something that we're promoting both, you know, throughout the labor movement, particularly among workers that are on the street, you know, during the day and are moving around like letter carriers do. And we're trying to get the city of Portland in particular to adopt that with city workers. But we know there's an example in what just happened in Los Angeles with the Dodger Stadium, where a city worker noticed ICE in the Dodger Stadium parking lot, notified the police, who notified the Dodgers, who kicked them off their parking lot. So that was pretty impressive. Sure, I just see that kind of thing happen here. So, Gio, you're involved with a campaign against Avalos Airline, an ICE contractor which deports migrants. Tell our listeners about that campaign, why it's important for unions, and who's involved, and how our listeners can connect.
Absolutely. So this Avalo Airlines pressure campaign was born out of our labor working group in the chapter. We conceived of the idea as sort of this intersection between the international workers' struggle and the immigrant worker struggle is critical to, you know, the plight of labor. And we noticed that anger had been building around the city's contract with Avail Airlines, which includes a host of rent waivers, fee waivers for operating out of the airport. It includes some grants, and our concrete demand to the city council has been for them to cancel the contracts. The mobilizations that we've conducted have included packing city council meetings and having folks testify during the public comment sessions. We have had folks from the local Stop Avalo chapter in Salem. We have had folks from Latinos Unidos Siempre, which is a local youth BIPOC advocacy organization, join us in some of those efforts. And using also our petition, which has been circulating across town and is now actually broached over 600 signatures, which is pretty remarkable. We've used that to place a lot of public pressure on city council, making sure that it doesn't stay contained within the halls of their meetings, but also like externally, publishing it across newspapers as well, placing pressure on social media. One of the big goals of the campaign is to make sure that we're centering working class language in this, by also connecting it to a lot of the plight that's going on in LA, for example. When that occupation happened by the Trump regime, we made sure to also escalate the demands to also include some kind of denouncement by the city council. And ultimately, because we're not seeing a lot of movement on the part of city council, we're also asking our membership to prepare to set the groundwork for a future city council run as well.
You're talking about Salem DSA, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
is the Democratic Socialists of America, which That's helped right. elect four city councilors.
That's right. That's right. So we're getting inspired by that work to prepare our own run as well.
So overall, how would you both encourage our listeners to get involved in the struggle to stop ICE and Trump's deportation drive, either through their labor unions or in other ways?
Back in February, the AFL-CIO released a frontline solidarity toolkit for unions. It's a mass deportation fight back toolkit for union activists and organizers. So anyone can request the PDF of that through their website. It's a really good resource.
Great. AFL-CIO website. Thank you. Gio, do you have something to add about how our listeners can get involved with the struggle?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. I would suggest, like, as for anybody, building a rank-and-file caucus in your union that will promote class struggle demands, like abolishing ICE and ending forever wars. I will always make the pitch for folks to join a Democratic mass member organization like DSA to build cross-sector working-class movements. And engaging in mass politics by building coalitions with community organizers. One of the things that I forgot to mention is if folks want to get plugged into the work that we are doing by supporting like our petition or anything like that, feel free to get in touch with us, info@salemdsa.org or email, or just visiting our website, salemdsa.org, to find our petition and help us by signing it.